Cambridge 105.
Community radio in your city.
Good afternoon, 6 o'clock. Welcome to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. We have a packed hour of sports chats ahead of us, but first of all, it's time for the sports news.
Hey, it's all going to work out. Here's sports.
So first of all, the sports news. Final round of Premier League games has just finished with Chelsea and Arsenal taking the last two Champions League spots ahead of Tottenham. We'll be looking at all today's games in detail very shortly, and it's been very much a case of goals galore. But first of all, here's Brian with the results.
That's right, Chris. 36 goals flew in on the final day of the season, so crazy goings on. We'll start with the Chelsea result. Chelsea won 2-1 against Everton. Liverpool 1-0 at home against QPR. Man City lost at home 2-3 to Norwich. Good final win for Norwich there. Newcastle, of course, that was the big game. They were hosting Arsenal at St James's Park. Arsenal won that 1-0. Southampton drew 1-1 with Stoke. Fulham won away at Swansea 3-0. Tottenham, great game that. 1-0 final result there to Tottenham against Sunderland. And perhaps the most remarkable result of the day, West Brom 5, Manchester United 5. Yes, yes, I'm not making this up. It was 5-all at the Hawthorns. West Brom 5, Man United 5. West Ham 4-2 against Reading on their last game of the season. And Wigan 2-all, they drew at home to Villa. Those were all the scores, Chris.
Thanks, Bri. We'll be going through all those games in more detail very shortly, but first of all, the rest of the news. Stuart Broad ripped through the New Zealand batting order at Lords today as England won the first test by 170 runs. This morning, Tim Southee looked like he'd given the Black Caps a decent chance of victory, taking 6 for 50 to dismiss England for 213, which was a lead of just 238. But Broad took 7 for 44 with 2 for 23 from Jimmy Anderson, and New Zealand collapsed to 68 all out, the 10th lowest test score at Lords. The second and final test starts on Friday at Headingley. In cycling, Vincenzo Nibali retained the overall lead in the Giro d'Italia today. Former Italian champion Giovanni Visconti won the Alpine stage with a superb solo breakaway in snowy conditions on the Col du Galibier. Colombian Carlos Betancur finished second to move into the lead in the Young Riders competition, whilst Nibali's closest challengers, Cadel Evans, Rigoberto Urán and Mauro Sant'Ambrogio, all finished safely alongside Nibali. Just 6 days racing remain in the three-week race, with the riders taking a well-earned rest day tomorrow. Yeovil Town have won promotion to the Championship with a 2-1 victory in the League One playoff final. Top scorer Paddy Madden fired in from outside the box after just 6 minutes, and James Hayter touched in Dan Burns' header to make it 2-0 by half time. Brentford came back strongly with Harley Dean's header, but Yeovil hung on to win promotion to the second tier of English football for the first time in their history. Graham McDowell has won golf's world match play title in Bulgaria. Earlier today, McDowell defeated South African Brandon Grace 3-2 in the semi-final, and he maintained his good form with a 2-1 victory over Thailand's Tongchai JD in the final. And Johnny Wilkinson kicked 11 points to help Toulon win Rugby Union's Heineken Cup yesterday. They beat Clermont Auvergne 16 points to 15. And that is all of the latest sports news.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
And we're here for the next 57 minutes or so. Chris Dewarden, Brian Harris. Hello, Brian.
Hi.
And Mike Kerwin, a welcome return to the airwaves.
It's good to be back, Chris. It's good to be back.
I think your last one was our Olympics review in August last year, which was a classic.
It's still fresh in my mind.
Yeah. I remember your amazing attempt to explain the rules of, was it judo?
Volleyball.
Volleyball. Yeah. Okay. Well, volleyball. I remember it very well.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be all a similar kind of thing this year, but no Olympics. It's going to be a bit tough.
Ooh, yeah.
But we're filling in throughout the summer while the football season is kind of come to a close, certainly non-league-wise, before From the Terraces return with their local football show back in the middle of August. So we're here for the next 3 months, between 6 and 7. As well as looking at all of the week's sporting action, we will also be having a couple of features as well, hopefully looking at some local sports clubs, but also every week we'll be looking at pulling out a classic sporting event from the archive and discussing that, which we'll be doing at about 6:45 today. I'm going to be giving you some clues as to what that event is throughout the show. So the first clue, you're not supposed to get it from the first clue, by the way.
Okay. Are we meant to be guessing?
Okay. You can guess if you want. Yeah.
I have no clue what it is.
Well, that's because I'm just about to read out the clue. Right? The first clue is the man of the match in the final of this event was awarded to a player on the losing side. So, yeah, very, very tough to start with. But the clues will get easier. It'll become obvious as we go.
I'm thinking not synchronised swimming in the Olympics.
So that was my second choice. So first of all, the top story today. So it's the end of the Premier League football season. The end has no end, as the Strokes say there, because it'll all start again soon. It'll never be finally decided who has won the football, to quote David Mitchell. And the end is finished.
So the song leads into the story, Chris.
That's the point.
That's how clever. Chris rolls.
Do you reckon we can keep that up for 13 weeks?
Oh, I don't know.
We reckon we'll run out pretty soon.
It's a bold statement.
You might need some more generic songs called "There's Some Sport Happening Somewhere."
Yeah, "There's a Sport Happening Somewhere" by Whitesnake. Yeah, I'll bring that out next week.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we've got to start the Hawthorns, really.
Yeah. What happened
at
the Hawthorns? Five all, crazy. We're just listening to the commentary at the end of that match, and it was 5-2 to Manchester United, which is still a crazy, crazy result. You do get a lot of crazy results on the last day of the season, always have done. But you'd think, well, you know, United away at West Brom, that's fair enough. But then they conceded three goals in the final 10 minutes, and the commentator said, well, you know, when was the last time Manchester United sort of came, you know, were 5-2 up and ended up drawing 5-all? We were just speculating about that. Probably never is the answer.
Well, I think, as Mike said before we came on air, you've got to tick these boxes, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, probably the only thing left in Sir Alex Ferguson's kind of, you know,
CV that CV. he hadn't managed to include kind of losing a three-goal lead at the Hawthorns.
Yeah, 10 minutes to go. You know, he started rearranging things, putting De Gea up front. Ferdinand in goal.
Yeah. He won't be happy, though. I mean, you know, well, maybe he doesn't care, but knowing Ferguson the way I do.
which is not knowing him at all.
But I remember there was an interview with him where he sort of laughed and they said about the Rooney situation, and he just said, "That's not my problem," which sort of suggests that he has finally sort of accepted it's time to move on. But any kind of result like that, he wouldn't be happy that his United team would have conceded like that in any match, really, even if it's meaningless. Okay, they've won the league, they won it like months ago, and you know, so nothing end of season game, but it's his last ever game in charge, and I don't think Fergie will be happy drawing his last ever game in charge, albeit in a crazy 10 goal sort of, you know, thriller.
Maybe the people that do know Ferguson, you know, the players on the pitch, yeah, recognise that his favourite game is a 10-goal thriller.
Do you think they're trying to wind him up? They went, oh. Well, you know when someone leaves after such a long time, it's like, oh, let's play a little joke on him. They thought, let's let three in. Come on, that'll really annoy him.
I think I'm going to run a little conspiracy theory by you. There was, as final days of the season goes, there wasn't really too much up for grabs. There was the Arsenal-Spurs kind of question, you know, who would finish fourth.
Yeah.
And that was about it. So,
yeah, you're right. There was nothing at stake on the last day of the season.
So maybe the league has got
in. Can you think of a year, Mike, where there was a lot more at stake and the last game of the season?
Well,
I'm struggling to remember when, I don't know, say the last kick of a game somewhere.
You're always eager to bring up, you know, Man City winning the league, aren't you?
But, you know, you're right that most of the big, the relegation and the champion and so on, were all decided already. There was this one issue, which was the whether or Arsenal or Tottenham, whether Tottenham could leapfrog Arsenal. But even that wasn't actually likely to happen, because it did depend on two sets of results going the right way.
We'll come to that shortly. Okay. Just to round off West Brom Man U, mm-hmm. United went 3-0 up after half an hour. Shinji Kagawa, and then an Olsen own goal, and then a Butner in the 30th minute. So I think Kagawa and Butner shows that there wasn't a full-strength Manchester United side. But then Morrison scored in with that 5 minutes ago to half-time. So half-time is 3-1 to United. And then Lukaku, straight after half-time, got it back to 3-2. Glimmer of hope, but Van Persie and good old Chicharito Hernandez scored to make it 5-2. And then, Lukaku two more in the last 10 minutes, and Malumbu as well, and so Lukaku hat-trick. And West Brom 5, Man U 5's final score. We should say, actually, it meant that Man U extended their lead at the top of the table. Because the result...
What else happened, Chris?
The result at the Etihad was also a kind of a bit of an interesting one. A 5-goal thriller. Two goals for Jack Rodwell, who, the forgotten man.
Well, he's been injured most of the season, actually. He is kind of the forgotten player of City's season this year. Although he played in the last couple of games, he has played quite well. He sort of popped up. Played quite well in the final, one of the few players to play okay in the FA Cup final. And then I think he did pop up with a decent performance last week. But, I don't, as a City fan, who cares, really? I mean, we were safe in second.
The players should care. They're meant to be impressing whoever the new manager is.
How many of these players will actually be around next season? That's the interesting thing. Will we see the likes of Dzeko maybe next season? Or, Lescott, will he be there? Kolarov even? Nasri, will he still be there? Who knows? So it's interesting. You always get big high-scoring results on the latter day season. I wonder why. I mean, is it because the players are thinking, we're all basically off on holiday? We're going to spend our millions and buy the beach somewhere nice and exotic, and their minds aren't on the job.
Yeah, I think that's it, really, isn't it? I might touch on it before. There's very little at stake. There was a battle for third, fourth, fifth in the league, which we'll come to in a minute. And apart from that, thanks to Wigan's useless performance against Swansea about a week ago, which spoiled it for everyone.
Well, you were saying that earlier, weren't you?
If Wigan had won against Swansea, then at the beginning of today, anyone from 11th to 18th could have gone down.
That would have been a good end.
There would have been 2 points that separating 11th and 18th.
That would have been a great final day to the season. Yeah, and of course then Arsenal beat them, so it was kind of game over, wasn't it?
But all that happened in the end is that it was a battle to see who would come 17th, which incidentally turned out to be Sunderland, so just for the record.
Yeah, Paolo Di Canio will be back next season.
That's true, he will. Bigger and brighter things expected from Sunderland next season. But hang on, we say that every season. It never really tends to transpire.
And Newcastle and Liverpool and every other team.
Yes,
that's true.
We expect much more from all of those teams. We think all of those teams will finish in the top six next season, and Everton as well.
But just a word for Norwich, 3-2 win at Man City, even last third season, still a very good performance for them. They moved up the table to finish in 11th place, which I think is a very credible performance.
Strong.
Although, as I indicated before, they're only 3 points ahead of 16th, but still, they were, having said that, they're only 2 points off 9th.
Pleased for Chris Hughton. Actually, last Sunday, I was doing the sport on the Sunday breakfast show, and I think Phil said, Norwich, are they safe? And I said, oh, yeah. Definitely. And of course, they weren't technically safe at that point at all. But because they won last week, they were safe. So I like to think that I was just being very positive about their chances.
Are you taking credit for Norwich's survival? Is that where we're going?
Well, it was always a bit unlikely last week that they would be kind of be dragged into it, because Wigan were more or less out of it, as you said, after losing to Swansea. So it was always, I was basically saying, unless everything goes against them, they're pretty much safe, which is how it turned out. So yeah, as you said, they finished mid-table. Great result for Chris Hughton and the Norwich fans. Yeah, they'll all be happy. All those teams will be happy to avoid the relegation scrap, basically, I think. From Norwich down, Stoke as well, and Southampton, Villa as well. It was looking a bit dicey for them for the latter part of the season, wasn't it?
Comfortable in the end. Comfortable.
Yeah. Well, they just need all you need is a couple, two or three good wins towards the end of the season. Well, which was Wigan's escape route normally.
Yeah. Well, Villa have kind of they've used up their excuses now. Throughout the whole season, saying, "Yeah, young team. If they can just stay up this season, then they're going to do big things next season." So that's over now. Like they're going to be judged to a different kind of set of objectives next year, and it'd be interesting to see how they whether these young guys actually do well. A, stay, and B, come through and play well, and see how Villa do next year.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed by Benteke. Obviously, he did well towards the end of the season, and I think they've got the best goalkeeper for me in the league, actually, Brad Guzan.
Yeah, and that's you're not the only person to suggest that recently. He's been in some people's Premier League lineups.
You and Garth Crooks, right?
Yeah. Oh no, I take that right back. Yeah. So Villa drew 2-2 today. We're talking about Villa at away at Wigan.
So Wigan's last game in the Premier League for a while, at least. Yes. Emerson Boyce scored for them. Darren Bent actually scored for Villa. Yeah. And Ron Vlaar.
Ron Vlaar. I like Ron Vlaar.
Yeah, it's a good name, that. It sounds like he could be in Lord of the Rings or something.
And we still don't know where Roberto Martinez is going to end up, do we? There's still speculation that he's going to take over from Moyes at Everton. But Yeah, I mean, I doubt that he'll follow them down into the Championship, really. I'd be surprised if Martinez wasn't at a Premier League club, because I think he's quite highly regarded as a manager.
Well, either that or even somewhere in Spain or the Bundesliga.
He does seem quite heavily emotionally invested in the club, though, so yeah. You know, maybe.
Well, he's been in Britain quite a long time now. I think he's got family and everything here, and, you know, he's basically English, is what I'm saying.
That's true, actually. He was one of the three Spanish players to come across play for Swansea about 15 years ago, as I remember it well.
That was a great clip of them arriving, sort of trying to adjust to English life. It's like, here's a Cornish basti. That's how they speak in Swansea.
We should talk about the kind of thing that actually meant something in the Premier League today. Obviously, the only thing that wasn't decided was who would be playing in the Champions League. Chelsea were third, Arsenal were fourth, and Tottenham fifth with a game to go. Chelsea were pretty much safe unless they lost like 17-0 or something.
Could have happened.
But Arsenal had to win. And if they didn't win, then a Tottenham win would have put Tottenham ahead of Arsenal.
Yeah.
A lot of people at various points through the season bringing out, I remember when Tottenham beat Arsenal in the league, it was all like changing of the guard and all the Tottenham fans were getting really ahead of themselves. Even this season, when Tottenham have had the player of the year and they feel like they've had a really excellent season, they're still not finished ahead of Arsenal. It must really gall them, that.
Are you just trying to annoy Tottenham fans, Chris?
Well, it's not difficult to annoy Tottenham fans.
Arsenal have had I'm just looking at the table. They haven't lost in 10, so they've had a really good... They've been an excellent run, Arsenal.
Yeah.
They are in the form of the league, really, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you remember earlier in the season, there was a lot of criticism headed Wenger's way.
Yep.
Never question the prof. Well, I think we've all learned.
I think he's still been getting some criticism towards the end of the season.
I think with Arsenal, I think you've got to kind of bear in mind that the criticisms have been the same for a few years. Yeah. That once they're out of it, they play really well and they play really good football and they're fine. But when they're in a real pressure situation, they're still in with a chance of winning something. That's when they've kind of fallen by the wayside and had a silly 1-1 draw at home to Bradford or whoever it might be.
Yeah,
Bradford
aren't even in the
Premier League, are they? They're coming. They're on the way.
Yeah,
we'll
they will
about
be.
Shortly.
You're being a bit premature.
Although they did lose to Bradford in the Cup this year, so that kind of counts.
Yeah, Bradford beat quite a number of Premier League teams, didn't they, in the Club Cup this year. So, guess what happened in the Tottenham game, though? Well, this is sort of, if you ever wanted a sort of a nice...
It's been amazing, hasn't it? I mean, Arsenal knew that if they won, they were in the Champions
safe,
League.
Yep.
And Koscielny scored for them just after half-time. It was a bit of a, bounced around in the area a bit, and then all of a sudden the ball was kind of, I don't know, it was quite a good finish, wasn't it? It was kind of at waist height. And in the six-yard box, he kind of swiveled and jumped up and volleyed it past the keeper. And Tottenham obviously just had to assume that Arsenal would let in a late equaliser and kept pushing for the victory. And as Brian said, fairly inevitable outcome. It's not the first time it's happened this season
that Tottenham
have been drawing. And then who pops up?
0-0 up to the 90th minute. And none other than PFA Player of the Year, Mr. Gareth Bale himself, pops up with apparently a really good free kick. Was it a free kick? Yes, I think it was. But anyway, he scored a cracker. Apparently it's a good goal. So I haven't seen it yet, but it's Gareth Bale. He scored. It's got to be a good goal.
He doesn't score tap-ins, does he? He also got booked for diving as well, where I'm hearing that it was almost a definite penalty. And he should have got a penalty, but he got booked.
Because again, that was the other story this season, wasn't it? For a long time, it was Bale was a sort of, you know, diver. And then we all forgot about that because he scored so many amazing goals. But probably just a bit too little too late for Tottenham, because that goal wasn't enough, as Chris just said, that Arsenal winning, as they had to really. A win for Arsenal was always going to just be good enough. And to be fair, away at Newcastle, they've not had a great season, have they? So, you know, you'd fancy Arsenal at St James's Park, really. Because they had a miserable season. Newcastle.
We saw about half of the game and... Yep. Arsenal were playing some, certainly beginning of the second half, the goal was coming. Arsenal playing some really nice possession football in Newcastle's half, and Newcastle weren't really getting out. But obviously we didn't see the end of the game. Maybe Newcastle had a bit of a late attack and nearly got level, but Arsenal certainly looked in control from what we saw.
Well, they didn't have anything to play for either, Newcastle, did they? Particularly, they were safe.
That's true. Another reason that Wigan...
Were they always going to finish above Sunderland?
Well, no, actually.
If Sunderland had won today, they would have finished above Newcastle.
So you're right, local pride at stake.
Exactly, that would mean more than, you know, relegation, yeah. I reckon.
But I think that was the big incentive for Arsenal in midweek when they beat Wigan 4-1. That beating Wigan meant not only did it give them 3 points, but it meant that Newcastle would have nothing to play for in the last. See, they were thinking ahead.
That is good planning. Strategic win.
To sum up, Premier League, Manchester United top with 89 points. Man City 11 points behind on 78, which actually 78 from 38 games would have been enough to win the league in more than one occasion in the last 15 years.
Don't say that, Chris. That's just winding me up now.
Chelsea 75 points, and then Arsenal 2 points further back. Those four teams go into the Champions League. Obviously, Chelsea and Arsenal will have to play a qualifier. Tottenham will go into the Europa League, which I'm sure they'll be ecstatic about. There's 72 points. And then Everton pipped Liverpool by 2 points for sixth place. That's probably the second or third season in a row where Everton have finished above Liverpool.
I think they were guaranteed to finish above Liverpool because Everton lost today and Liverpool won. So even with those sets of results, Liverpool will still finish behind Everton. And that was Jamie Carragher's last game today for Liverpool after 16 years.
And those seven teams were the only teams to finish with a positive goal difference. Everyone else let in more goals than they scored. So a kind of a league dominated by seven teams, and then there's a gap from 7th to 8th of 12 points. And then the rest of the teams were fairly even, really. I think West Brom, Swansea in 8th and 9th, I think, are the teams that most people would say deserve to be eighth and ninth, and then the rest of them were all much of a muchness, and it was fairly close. But Wigan, Reading, and QPR, as you already will be aware, were the three teams that went down. Any other stories from the Premier League games today?
Apart from the 10-goal thriller at West Brom, which we talked about,
it's not enough for me.
Enough. Well, 36 goals on the last day of the season, and lots of farewells, managers saying goodbye in various places. So,
Football is retiring. Everyone's retiring.
Alex Ferguson is the sort of embodiment of football.
You mentioned Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, Michael Owen's retired. I think he retired already, but he didn't. I don't think he played in the last game. Who else is retired?
David Beckham yesterday.
Scholes,
at Paris.
Yeah. Scholes. Oh, Phil Neville has announced his retirement as well.
That's right.
And
yeah.
I'm wondering if he's going to follow his brother into punditry.
Well, I think Phil Neville looks like the kind of guy who could be quite a successful manager. I'd be interested.
He's got that
to
look
see.
About him.
Yeah, I think so. There's even talk of, I think he's third or fourth favourite for the Everton job.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Yeah.
West Ham Reading was the other kind of high scoring game. Kevin Nolan hat trick.
Ooh.
Maybe the first of his career, I don't know. Certainly it would be the first of his career that hasn't involved a penalty. It was pretty close. West Ham went 2-0 up. Reading got a couple back. Lafondre again.
I
love him. He's brilliant.
You're obsessed with Adam Lafondre.
But then Kevin Nolan got two more in the 79th and 87th minute, and West Ham won 4-2.
Maybe Andy Carroll's last game for West Ham.
Oh, really? Is he rumoured to be off?
Well,
is
he's on loan at West Ham.
Okay.
So he's maybe going back to Liverpool next season.
Yep.
Now, next week we will be talking about the Champions League final, which is on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week after will be our Premier League season review. So we'll be talking about kind of the whole season and picking out our favourite players and favourite incidents.
I'll do my top three linesmen.
Will yours be Adam Lafondre?
I'll tell you what, the Adam Lafondre late show when Reading came back in that game in kind of October, November time, I'll have to look that one up and remind myself who it was against, but that was pretty amazing.
Favourite players with the French word for the in the middle. It's like Chris is going to do his top five.
That's right, Graham Lassau. Who else is there?
Gregory Laavre.
I suppose that makes sense. Yeah, Julian Lescott.
Lescott, yeah.
Well, I've only got one
French,
to go.
And
we've got a week to think of one more. Okay, that's good. Football-wise, we've still got some non-Premier League things to talk about, which are coming up shortly. Our roving reporter, Mike, was actually at the... at the game yesterday at Wembley, so we'll be talking about that shortly. Anything else on the Premier League before we move on, guys? Or Brian, just one more time, just review the scores for today for people that have only just tuned in.
Okay. So, yeah, the scores were Chelsea beat Everton 2-1 at home. Sorry, I don't need to say at home because it's just the order that I'm reading them out in. Liverpool 1-0. City 2.
That would be good in the classified football checkers. Yeah. And here are the results of the Premier League. What I'll do is I'll read out the home team score first.
Just explaining the mechanics of it for, say, new listeners. Yeah,
Chelsea were playing in blue today.
Manchester City, last year's champions, lost at home to Norwich 3-2. Newcastle lost at home 1-0 to Arsenal. Southampton and Stoke drew at Southampton. Swansea lost at home 3-0 against Fulham. Tottenham won 1-0 against Sunderland. West Brom drew 5-5. Yes, you heard that correctly. 5-5 against Manchester United. West Ham beat Reading 4-2. And Wigan drew 2-2 against Aston Villa. So those were all of the results today. Crazy. I'm not sure. 36 goals must be a record. I reckon that's the most goals on any given day of the Premier League.
I reckon there's been more. But okay, certainly, final day of the season, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll look it up.
I'm going to look it up.
That meant Man U first, Man City second, and it meant Tottenham into the Europa League, Chelsea and Arsenal into the Champions League qualifiers. And that's all the Premier League stuff.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
First clue of the archive feature, classic sporting event we're going to be talking about later, was that the man of the match was awarded to a player on the losing side in the final of that competition. And second clue is that before the final of this competition, Montserrat Caballé performed the song Barcelona, accompanied by a video of Freddie Mercury, who was already dead by that time. So it's kind of like a precursor to the Tupac hologram at Lollapalooza. Yeah. So that's the second clue. Before the final, Montserrat Caballé performed the song Barcelona, accompanied by a video of Freddie Mercury.
Okay, I've ruled out the 66 World Cup final.
Any
mate.
Guesses?
Do you have a final of the Olympics?
Yeah, it was the Olympic Games final. I suppose there's a football final, but no, it wasn't that.
Was it football? Am I guessing it's football? Maybe it's not football.
Well,
man of the match. Is it hockey?
No, it is football. Okay. There's a third clue.
Additional
clue.
Yeah.
I prize that one out of you.
I suppose a Barcelona Olympics would have worked. Freddie Mercury died in 91 and the Barcelona Olympics were 92. So, but it wasn't that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's time for our next segment. Kind of running low on inspiration by this point, but well, it's kind of all right, isn't it? All or nothing. It was the playoff finals in League One and League Two this weekend, and also in midweek, obviously, the playoff semi-finals for the Championship, the final being a week on Monday on the bank holiday, as always. Shall we start with the Championship semi-finals from earlier in the week, Mike?
Let's do it. They were certainly the more interesting, I think, of the games. Certainly from my perspective, Bradford fans would think otherwise, I would imagine. But yeah, in the Championship, so Leicester were playing Watford in the first semi-final, and Crystal Palace were playing Brighton in the second one. And kind of the Crystal Palace-Brighton games were fairly run-of-the-mill, 0-0 after the first leg. And then Crystal Palace beat Brighton away, so they were playing at Brighton, 2-0, which has caused Gus Poyet, the kind of outspoken Uruguayan, to come out and say that he's not really happy with the speed of Brighton's elevation into football greatness. And that has caused him to be suspended by the club.
Yeah, so it was a strange statement. It really did seem
as if...
Are you
translating it from the Uruguayan then? it seemed like it lost something a bit.
Admittedly, my Uruguayan is a bit rusty. but I think I got the gist.
I believe they speak Spanish. Poyet, it was a bit of a kind of, you know, all about me kind of statement, wasn't it? Kind of, I want to be managing the Premier League. If Brighton can't do it this year, then maybe I'm going to have to think about going somewhere else next year. You know, it was that kind of thing. Certainly he was leaving himself open. And bearing in mind a bit of trivia that Brian produced earlier about how many Premier League management changes there are going to be over the summer, as over the last kind of few months, you know, he might have a chance of a bigger job.
Yep.
Although having said that, this is kind of a bit unprofessional, and is that going to work against him if he's going to try and get
I don't think it should have come as a surprise to him that the chairman the chairman is operating a kind of a slow and steady approach to success, which, you know, it has worked for clubs in the past like Charlton. You know, they've gone up.
Where are they down, now, though?
They're going down. Well, you know, certainly not in the Premier League. But it's probably a sensible approach to, more sensible than the Leeds approach, for example. More sustainable.
that's like saying, oh yeah, being the second shortest dwarf.
Well, yeah,
you're more sensible than Leeds.
Yeah, but yeah, so he has been suspended, and it looks like they're going to part ways fairly
soon. So you think he's going to be off?
I think they will agree, so what, mutually agree to part ways.
What he said is, and just to translate, that's to summarise, I'm a great manager. The players have let me down. This club's a bit rubbish. I won't be managing the Premier League. I'm really frustrated.
That is some great nutshelling there, Brian. That is some great nutshelling.
Yeah. Please don't sue me for slander or anything. That's not actually what he said. I'm just paraphrasing, okay? But fair enough, yeah.
All this does mean that we're one game away from having Ian Holloway back in the Premier League.
That puts a smile on your face, doesn't it?
Crystal Palace won 2-0 in the second leg, as you said. Wilfried Zaha scored both the goals, and Zaha obviously recently breaking through into the England squad, and be interesting to see if he plays in the friendly internationals against Ireland and Brazil in the next few weeks.
Hot prospect.
But, hot prospect indeed.
But what was more interesting was the other semi-final. So Leicester were playing Watford. After the first leg, Leicester were winning 1-0. And it was kind of heading towards extra time and possibly penalties. Watford were winning 2-1 at the time. And
it wasn't heading to extra time at all. It was Watford were heading through, because the first leg was 1-1, I think. Oh. And Watford were winning the second leg 2-1. Is that right? I thought that was right.
So I think it goes to penalties, doesn't it? In the
Well, not if you're 3-2 up on aggregate, it doesn't. No, okay, so Leicester won the first leg 1-0. Okay, it makes more sense now. So yes, you're right. So Leicester won the first leg 1-0, and Watford were 2-1 up in the second leg. So it was good. Yeah, they definitely don't do away goals. So it was 2-2 on aggregates.
Between you, you've worked it out. That's yes. The main thing.
Well, actually, I worked it out, and then Chris has finally caught up.
That's fair enough.
He's questioning your veracity.
So,
but then Leicester got a penalty.
And a slightly dubious penalty at that.
This is after, by the way, Leicester got into the playoffs with a 92nd-minute goal against Nottingham Forest in the last game of the league.
Not that you're bitter in any way about that.
Not at all.
But I'm presuming you were rooting for Watford at this point.
No, look, I'm ambivalent between Watford and Leicester scum. either way, it's fine.
Well, everyone surely should be rooting for one of football's favourite men, Gianfranco Zola. He's awesome. But he was certainly worried, I think, towards the end of the second game, where Leicester's Anthony Knockhart won a very, very dodgy penalty. I think he got knocked over by some wind between him and the Watford players. He got up, he decided to take the penalty himself,
right,
and blast from the past, Manuel Almunia, ex-Arsenal goalkeeper, saved the penalty.
And the rebound. Yeah.
And then 20 seconds later, Watford broke and scored themselves. Troy Deeney went up and...
Is that one name or is that two names?
That's two names. He sounds American, doesn't he? Troy.
It's like
Troy
the great Troy Deeney. Yeah. He's now going to escape from a water tank. Yeah. That was like 20 seconds after the missed penalty, wasn't it?
It was 20 seconds.
Well, a saved penalty.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Amazing ends, and which quite understandably sent Gianfranco Zola a bit nutty.
Yeah.
And he chased Troy Deeney.
What is it with
the
these
pitch.
Italians? Because, well, you know, you got Di Canio, who's known for his touchline antics.
They have passione.
And pasta. Yeah.
Well, the
justice
other,
was done, though.
It's only 3 years ago, don't forget, in the when Leicester lost the playoff semi-final in a penalty shootout, when Jan Kermorgens, I don't know if you remember this, against Cardiff, went for the old penalty shootout dink.
That's brave.
And the keeper just stood there and caught it. So that was another classic Leicester playoff fail, and unfortunately it's happened to him again because they missed this penalty. And
although it sounds like it shouldn't have been a penalty in the first place.
Justice was definitely served by all accounts.
Yeah, and who are we going for in the final then?
Well, so it's Crystal Palace against Watford. I think I would love to see Watford in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Watford finished 5 points ahead of Palace in the league and a goal difference of 16 better than Palace. Watford, it'd be a weird one. I mean, obviously very controversial. They've got about 15 players on loan because of they're owned by the same people that own Udinese in Italy and Granada in Spain. And lots of kind of question marks about who would actually be playing for them next season and whether they can afford to buy many of these players that they currently have on loan if they even wanted to go there. So who knows? I'd almost be, yeah, kind of rooting for Watford because I'm quite interested to see what happens if they go up with this really weird setup they have with all these loan players. So, yeah, could be interesting.
Mm.
But my best friend from school supports Crystal Palace.
So that mean you
yeah, so
you
I
like
kind of
Crystal
like,
Palace
yeah,
more,
I always
or?
Kind of liked Crystal Palace, yeah, for that reason.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Everyone likes Sola. He seems like a likable fellow, doesn't
he?
Yeah, and you know, okay, so a lot of their players are technically not their players, and if you, I think Chris's point is if that, you know, that's not really a viable way of sort of managing football clubs, is it?
But I think,
well, quick straw poll: Zola or Holloway, who would you prefer in the Premier League?
I'd much prefer Zola in the Premier League.
I think I would prefer Holloway just because it would annoy you, Chris.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. You've both gone and I have the casting vote, so there's no secret who I would prefer. Zola wins every time.
I mean, he's a sort of... Holloway's just an annoying idiot, isn't he?
Is it worth even playing the game? We could just submit our votes for who, yeah, should be promoted.
And we should move on. So, yeah, like we say, Watford Palace, a week on Monday.
Yeah, Monday at 3 o'clock, apparently.
Yeah, it's a bank holiday Monday. So,
oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I looked at that fixture and went, why are they playing in the afternoon?
They have to give plenty of time in case it goes to penalties and it finishes 102 all or something. But we've also had the League One and League Two player finals. You had a trip to Wembley Way yesterday, Mike.
I did, yesterday. Bradford were playing Northampton in a culmination of two successful, very successful league campaigns where you could argue that both Northampton and Bradford finished just a little bit above mid-table, and they are rewarded for that excellent finish with a trip to Wembley.
Well, it wasn't Bradford's first trip to Wembley either.
It wasn't
after their brilliant run in the Coca-Cola Cup, or whatever it's called nowadays. Yeah. I've gone back about 20 years,
and you could argue that they kind of handled this trip to Wembley slightly better than their 5-0 defeat at the hands of Swansea. Yeah.
Well, they probably learned a lot from that. Northampton, in hindsight, should have got to the League Cup final, and then they would have been better prepared for yesterday.
I think that's where yesterday went wrong. Yeah,
it was all over in half an hour, wasn't it?
It was. The writing was on the wall even before that. I think. So I quite enjoyed the first 2.5 minutes. Then it became pretty obvious that there was only one team that was ever really going to win, and. And Bradford scored their first after 15 minutes and then followed it in with another couple. The last goal was scored in the 28th minute, and at that point, the game was probably over.
Did you leave? Did you think, I'm just going to go and have a pie and then let's get the car and go home?
Well, you can't afford pies in Wembley.
Really?
Yeah, they're quite expensive.
Okay.
So,
got a terrible day for you then, Mike.
Yep.
Team gets beaten 3-0 after 28 minutes.
You
don't get a pie.
So it sounds like
to top it all off, as I was walking away from the stadium towards the tube, I was kind of walking along with a group of people, kind of looking at those group of people more than probably paying attention to where I was walking, and walked straight into a bollard.
Mike.
And I'm now walking with a limp.
That's the true pain of following a team, isn't
exactly.
It?
Not only emotionally really scarred, but physically scarred.
Yeah. Okay.
Just trying to get out of the big bike ride next month. That's my viewpoint. But yeah.
So I was going to say, it sounds like the better team on the day really won and deserved to go through then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it also made up for their as you said, their thrashing at Wembley earlier in the season a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
So one other playoff final has happened.
You see, Michelle Rowe, who was obviously sits in with Phil on Sunday mornings, morning, in fact, she didn't make the same mistake you did. I said to her, should you not be heading off towards Wembley? She's a Brentford fan,
by the way.
She
said, no, I walked into a bollard yesterday. So she did make the same mistake, in a way.
And she said that given that Brentford have lost their last 6 playoff appearances, she just couldn't face it again.
And she chose wisely.
She chose wisely, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So actually, the League One playoff is probably a better, or was competed with teams that probably deserve to be in the playoffs. So Brentford and Yeovil finished just outside the automatic promotion spots. And you can kind of get behind them having a little playoff, having a little end-of-season game to decide which one actually gets promoted.
Yeah, well, they're the teams who are in third and fourth, yeah. But it's great. It's great and weird that Yeovil... I mean, you know, Yeovil. Where's Yeovil? I mean, Yeovil is smaller than Cambridge. Well, and yet they're now in, the Championship. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's
like farming country.
It's really good. I mean, they were obviously in the playoff final a few years ago.
That's right, yeah.
The same playoff final. I can't remember who they lost to, but they certainly beat Nottingham Forest in the semi-final, which is why I remember it. But that was in the great days of Phil Jevons, the brilliant Yeovil midfielder, who Forest eventually signed as the only way they could stop losing to Yeovil all the bloody time. But Yeovil into the Championship. But the commentator was saying on the telly today that Yeovil, who would have thought, like, 10 years ago they're in non-league, and now next year they're going to be playing against some of the great teams in the history of English football, like Nottingham Forest and Leeds. I'm thinking, hang on, they played against both of those teams in League One over the last few years as well, so it wasn't quite such an amazing thing. But yeah, Yeovil, credit to them, very good first half, looked very solid, and got the first goal very early, got the second goal just before half time, which obviously was a big plus. And then Brentford did come back. Harley Dean, who's a central defender for them, who scored the goal, looked very good, actually. Looks very solid, and the kind of guy who could be picked up by a higher team next season. But they couldn't build on it. Even with 7 minutes of injury time, they still couldn't quite manage to get the equaliser.
They did have a really good go at it, though, apparently, by all accounts. They threw the kitchen sink at it. And
We watched the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it sounded like a good match.
And
Brentford are kind of known for their last-minute goals. And so it was set up for a nail-biter. But unfortunately,
Brentford were 20 seconds away from getting that automatic promotion spot, weren't they? They had a penalty. Mm. I was talking about it this morning on the news. Just saw Michelle's face was sort of thinking. Just a reminder that it was Marcello Trotta. He's on loan from Fulham, and he missed a penalty. And then this was against Doncaster. Went up the other end and scored. And that meant that if Brentford had actually converted that penalty, they would have been promoted automatically. Now losing a playoff final. It's just cruel. Football's a cruel, cruel sport. You know, if you follow these teams,
it's
and they break, hurt. They break your heart.
It's gotta hurt.
Yeah.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
Okay, we've got a weekly feature, which is Chris looks at a significant sporting fact related to the number 105.
This is like your ultimate feature. It involves sports and stats.
And numbers, yeah. So...
Was that it? Was that the stat?
That was the jingle. We're going to have to change that to something different.
You can shout sports in the middle of it.
105. Yeah, okay, we'll try that. Do you want to try that now? Okay, hang on. Sports!
That works.
That's kind of okay. Yeah. Right, so this is the fact for this week. 105 is the number of centuries scored by the Welsh snooker player and insomnia cure from the early 90s, Darren Morgan. So there you go. Hang on, that didn't work at all. That was the wrong jingle. Oh, well. That was quite good, though, wasn't it?
I thought Morgan may have been your sporting hero as well. So.
Jury's out on that one.
I've honestly never even heard of Darren Morgan. Did he have a nickname?
He got 105 centuries in his professional career.
Right.
So there you go. And now we have a brief bit of time to talk about the cricket. Now I had two songs. I couldn't decide. I originally had one, which is the one that's playing underneath us at the moment. But then today everything else changed, and I had to change the song. But first, England played New Zealand at Lords, of course. Jimmy Anderson was kind of the big kind of success story of the first 2 days. He took his 300th Test wicket, only the fourth Englishman to do so, which was very impressive, wasn't it? Good on him. So I had this song lined up. Jimmy the Exploder, but then had to change it with Stuart Broad.
Is it Angry Anderson, this one?
Stuart Broad, 7 wickets today. Yeah, so I changed it a little bit. They say the neon light. bit tenuous. I'd get away with that, I reckon. Do it the broad way.
It smacks of searching for broad in iTunes, Chris.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've got to have the songs in your iTunes in the first place. That's what I say. So, England, fairly comfortable victory in the end, but it could have been very different, Mike.
Yep. It was kind of a match for bowlers, really. The ball was kind of seaming and also swinging, and it was difficult for batsmen to really get in. I think we were looking at the scorecard for New Zealand second innings, and we noticed that the top six New Zealand batsmen failed to get into double figures.
No, ouch. I think four of them would have lost the West Brom Man United game. it was a pretty poor show. I mean, the first day back to Thursday was really slow going. England obviously had decided to just concentrate on keeping wickets in hand, and they were scoring at two and over. But you know, none of them really went on. Joe Root looked good, but still only 40, and Bairstow 41. But 2-3-2 all out, and New Zealand in reply. Ross Taylor looked good for 66 off 72 balls, and Kane Williamson. Actually, I have to mention Kane Williamson. I nearly forgot about this. We might not have time to go through the whole lot, but Kane Williamson. I thought, can you possibly get a whole cricketing 11 from people that you could find in garden centres?
It turns out. You can, or more specifically, Chris can.
Okay, I can. Kane Williams. I had to expand it from garden centres to kind of, you know, B&Q home base type. They've got a garden centre bit, haven't they? But they've also got
homewares,
other stuff.
Shops
as
to
well,
sell anything. Right? Yeah. I think.
So anyway, okay. So we've got Eric Shade. Not so sure
Lamb
about that
Shade.
One. Glenn Hook. Yeah. Yep. He played 8 games for Auckland about 50 years ago. Alex Barrow. Currently playing for Somerset, yeah, they're Barrows, don't they? Merv Kitchen, of course, the former Somerset player and successful umpire. They have Kitchen, you know,
not really
you
a garden
get a kitchen,
centre.
And yeah. No, we've already specified home base B&Q.
So not only is this tenuous links to garden centres, it's also a tenuous link to actual cricketers.
You'll like that. Merv Kitchen, 354 games for Somerset.
And the guy that played for Auckland?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a cricketer. Arthur, you'll like this one then. Arthur Washer. Played one game for Canterbury in the late 1800s.
Scraping the barrel.
Graham Dowling, I quite like that one. Oh, yeah, former Dowling. New Zealand captain. Donald Stanley, does that count? Stanley Knight? Brad Spanner. I think that's my favourite one. He played one match for Queensland in 1992, Brad Spanner, and he got naught.
That's a great name, Brad Spanner.
That technically is not a cricketer.
Yeah. And then to round it off, this is my favourite one, George Plank. he played one game. It was at Lord's in 1837. It was gentlemen against players. Gentlemen had 16 men on their team, and players only had 11. And gentlemen with 16 batsmen, bearing that in mind, scored 74 and 42 in their two innings. And players with 154 in their only innings, one behind innings and 38 runs. J.H. Kerwin took 4 wickets. Any relation, Mike?
That's a distant ancestor.
Yep.
What year was this? 1830?
1837.
Wow. Yeah.
Probably an uncle.
I got a lot of Uncle Kerwin.
He would escaped from Ireland at that point.
So anyway, that was a bit of a digression.
You're not kidding.
Kane Williamson scored 60. Jimmy Anderson took 5 wickets, including his 300th for England. And then Joe Root did look good in second innings, didn't he? 71. And he does look a fine, or he also looks about 12.
Yep. He looks both of those things. He looks like he's got the mindset for top quality first class cricket as well. He was very, very upset about getting out, you know, top scorer in the match.
Yeah.
Very,
and he was
very upset
gutted,
about getting out.
He looks like I thought Jimmy Taylor would look when he went into the England team, and it just didn't quite work out for him, although hopefully he will get another chance. But New Zealand in reply, 68 all out. What a disaster for them, because obviously after drawing the series with England and looking the better side a lot of that series in New Zealand, coming over here, bowling England out for 200 a couple of times, they would have, you know, they were in quite happy with their work, but then just the batsmen let them down on the final day. 29 for 6 at one point, with the top 6 all gone.
And actually, we say the batsmen kind of capitulated, but I think some credit needs to go to the bowling as well. I think all throughout the match, the seam bowlers, the swing bowlers, were hitting wearing pretty good lines and pretty good lengths. And it was the lengths that got most people.
Who's anyone coming in for the second test? Are we going to see KP?
No, he won't be in for the second test. It probably, well, I wouldn't be surprised if both lineups were the same.
Same, okay. But, yeah. Just wondered.
Okay. Sporting Heroes of the Week time now. Sporting Hero of the Week. Well, Mike, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about the cricket, and kind of England definitely dominated the last day. But you know, England, the record books will say that England won this match comfortably. I'd just like to say Tim Southee is my Sporting Hero of the Week. He got 10 wickets, and 10 wickets at Lord's is a very special thing. And he will kind of almost be overshadowed by England's play.
No, oh, nice shout, Mike. Brian, your Sporting Hero of the Week.
Well, I was struggling to choose between two. Technically, my Sporting Hero of the Week has to be Rafa Nadal after winning today, actually, and probably like a couple of hours ago, against his old nemesis, Roger Federer. He leads 20-10. They've played 30 games together, and he's beaten him a lot more than the other way around. Here, 6-1, 6-3 he won. This is the Rome Masters. And, he's still struggling a lot with his knees. He can't play very much, but he had a seven-month layoff. He came back, and since then, he's been in eight consecutive finals. So Rafa Nadal is my hero of the week. And the other one would have been David Beckham, just because he'd retired finally from football in the grace and, you know, his customary sort of...
He did a lot of crying.
But we love Bex. I love Bex.
My hero, I think I'm going to go for Mark Cavendish. He won the expected sprint finish in midweek for his third stage win in the Giro d'Italia. But then the following day, on a really long stage, 230-odd kilometres, no one really expected a sprint finish. He didn't really want to go for it, but his... because he was feeling pretty spent, but his team said no, we're going to go for the stage win, and they rode an amazing race, and there's loads and loads of attacks, loads of breakaways, and they kept closing them down, and then Cav finished it off just so knackered he looked by the end of it. It was amazing. He won it by kind of, you know, more than a couple of inches. It was he really did look on his last legs. We haven't heard yet, but we think he's got through the mountain stage today, and in which case he'll be geared up to try and get another one or two stage wins next week.
It was basically pretty tough today, you know. It was like the conditions were treacherous, didn't they?
It was snowing at the top.
Well, I was doing the sports news this morning, and the latest from the Giro was that they'd actually cancelled two of the climbs, the Category 1, yeah. I think. Climbs.
Well, we'll talk about the Giro next week. We're no time today.
Yeah.
Mark Cavendish, my Sporting Hero of the Week anyway, so that's that bit done.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
Ticking off the list.
We got
about 8 minutes, well, 7 minutes to go for our brilliant new feature. Well, it's the first show, so obviously all of the features are new. But we're going to take a dip into the archive now and reminisce over a sporting classic event, which we probably haven't got time to do in as much detail as I was hoping. But the clues I gave you, man of the match was awarded to a player on the losing side before the final, Montserrat Caballé performed at Barcelona. And the third clue, which I didn't even give you, actually, I forgot. Pierluigi Collina called the final one of the most memorable matches of his career.
Okay. So
was it the Wimbledon final of...
Oh, good one, Mike.
Oh, boom.
Oh, was it? Okay, so it wasn't, I guess, World Cup 94, was it?
No, it was in Barcelona.
I'm going to go Champions League.
Champions
League final.
It was the Champions League final, what year?
93.
You're clutching at straws. It was the 1999 Champions League final between Manchester United and Bayern Munich.
Okay.
Well, the event is Manchester United's Champions League run of 1998-99.
Yeah.
Let's remember that now, shall we? United finished second in the Premier League behind Arsenal, so they had to qualify.
Those were the days.
They weren't straight into the groups, they had to qualify. And their campaign got off to an inauspicious start with a 0-0 draw in Poland against LKS Lodz.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, those are the days. They won the return leg 2-0 at Old Trafford. United's team, though, in those days, I mean, it does actually.
This was 99 was when they had their really top
well,
side.
It was their
it?
Treble, Fergie's treble side, winning season, yeah, so it's kind of apt with his last game today. Schmeichel in goal, Gary Neville, Jap Stam, Dennis Irwin, Henning Berg, maybe the weak link. I think he was all right, though. But look, midfield, Beckham, Scholes, Giggs and Keane.
Yeah.
The classic United midfield.
Yeah, definitely.
And then they had the rotating four strikers, Andy Cole, as he was then. Dwight York, Teddy Sheringham and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the four of them rotating up front. But they, in the Champions League, they did, really, they were, it was a bona fide group of death. And alliterative one at that, Barcelona, yeah. Bayern Munich and Brøndby, with only one team going straight through, and then of the six groups, the two best losers went through.
So like an actual Champions League rather than what we have now.
Yeah, well, although Man U weren't the champions, but yeah, it was only six groups and only the winners guaranteed to go through. And United only won two of their six group games. 6-2 and 5-0 against Brøndby, but they drew the other four. Brøndby beat Bayern Munich early on, but then Bayern Munich came back and beat Barcelona in both games, and that knocked Barcelona out. Bayern Munich topped the group, and Manchester United scraped through as the second best loser, so literally the eighth best team of the eight that got through to the quarterfinal. So they're already just like scrapping away, just about managing to stay in it.
Keeping their powder dry.
Yeah, well, you could say, put it that way. So in the last day, they got into Milan. United were in form, they were right at the top of the Premier League, and they'd recently won 8-1 at Nottingham Forest, which was a record away win in the Premier League. And actually, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer cemented his reputation as a super sub, scoring four goals in that game after coming on in the 73rd minute.
Really?
Yeah, still hurts. 8-1. Actually, okay, it was 8-1 to Man United. Guess how many shots on target United had in that game?
Seven.
It's a good guess.
Was one and own goal.
No, it was eight. They literally had eight shots on target. The keeper,
like that.
Keeper didn't manage to save any. The keeper was Dave Besant.
That's efficient play.
You'll like this, though. That, this is a bit of a digression, was also Forest and Man United. That was the 105th competitive meeting between those two sides. Oh, no just, word of a lie.
You've just used up a stat.
I know. Save that one.
Against Inter Milan, United scored in the 6th minute of the home leg. Dwight York it was, and then he got his second on the stroke half time for a 2-0 win. In the second leg, Inter scored first. Nicola Ventola, remember him?
No.
But Inter pressing for an equaliser, and Paul Scholes killed the tie off with an 88th minute away goal. United through to face Juventus in the semis. In the first leg of the semis at Old Trafford, Antonio Conte scored for Juventus in the first half. Juventus looking dangerous with Zidane and Deschamps, obviously world champions at the time. Davids and Pippo Inzaghi. Just as the added time board went up, the Fergie time board, there's a scramble in the box from a corner, Giggs slammed it in, and United had got out of a
what's happened to him, mate? What's happened to him?
Well, absolutely.
Well, Giggs,
yeah,
disappeared, didn't he, after that?
And before the second leg, United then played that classic FA Cup semi-final against Arsenal with that David Beckham free kick and the Schmeichel saving Bergkamp's penalty in the last minute, and then Giggs's wonder goal.
That was Giggs's goal or down the left, wasn't it?
That's right. So so they were on a real high when they went to Turin, but Juventus scored twice in the first 11 minutes and United looked out of it. Inzaghi got both. Second one was a big deflection off Yapstam. But yeah, again, they turned it around. Roy Keane was amazing in that game and one of the best kind of individual performances I've seen. He scored the first goal. Dwight York made it two before half-time. All of a sudden, United got two away goals. They're heading through, and then Andy Cole finished it off towards the end. So, yeah, again, another kind of game where they looked like they'd be out of it and came through. Really did look like their name was on the cup. Before the final, they beat Spurs 2-1 the last day of the season to win the title by a point, and then they won the FA Cup with a 2-0 win over Newcastle. But the final was a pretty rubbish game. And I mentioned that in the clues that the man of the match was awarded to a player on the losing side. Of course, that's because when they awarded the man of the match award, Bayern Munich were winning 1-0, and they gave the man of the match to the guy who scored the goal, Mario Basler. But then and United obviously 1-0 down, but they had Roy Keane and Paul Scholes suspended for the final, so that was tricky for them. But quality on the bench, United. I'll tell you about that on the bench. Wes Brown, David May, Phil Neville, and Jonathan Greening were their substitutes.
Yeah,
but also Teddy Sheringham and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They brought them on. There was that immortal line from the commentator when United got that corner at the end. Can United score? They always score. And then they scored. I guess it wouldn't have been such an immortal line if they hadn't scored.
Yeah.
But you can also, actually, you can watch, I'm checking the time, I've only got a couple of minutes left, but just to let you know, you can watch the last few minutes of this game on YouTube with the German commentary. It is very, very funny. In fact, even when they get that corner before their goal, 3 minutes to go, but Italian referees always have more time when it's a good game. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's interesting. It's kind of a contradiction of our stereotypical view of the Germans, that they have this kind of, you know, self-defeating streak as well, after all. But anyway, and then, yeah, Beckham got the ball right from kickoff after Sheringham's goal. Got another corner, Beckham flights it in, Sheringham heads it on, Solskjaer sticks out a foot, the rest is history. And I'll never forget laughing callously at the pictures of the distraught German players. Sami Kafur actually beating his fists on the pitch in distress was a particular highlight.
I do remember that.
And it was also, it was the day that would have been the 90th birthday of their other great manager, Sir Matt Busby. And Alex Ferguson was knighted himself the following month.
Wow. Good reminiscy package.
There you go. I had to rush it a bit. It's dead on 7 o'clock now. It's time for Rock Lit on Cambridge 105.